Welcome to Doc Talks, a Doctors of BC podcast. My name is Caroline McGeckin from Doctors of BC, and in today's episode, we'll be talking to Leanne Walsh, employment lawyer from West Coast Workplace Law, and Jackie Connolly, people and strategy manager from Doctors of BC. We'll discuss key aspects of HR best practices that doctors can revisit as part of a yearly checkup. We'll talk about the value of employee retention, key legal requirements for employers, and commonly asked HR questions. I'd first like to start by acknowledging and expressing my gratitude to the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations, whose ancestral, traditional, and unceded land is where I work and live. Hi, Leanne. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
In your employment law practice and through discussions with doctors, what are some legal requirements that you've noticed are commonly missed by employers?
As an employment lawyer, I always think that going over workplace policies annually, as well as having a good review of employment agreements annually, sets up employers well for the year ahead. It's preventative maintenance for employers. I mean, and this kind of review lets employers see where updates are needed, and it ensures a couple of things. I think first, that employers are continuing to build the kind of workplace culture that they want. And of course, this is important when they're trying to attract and retain great people, and also that they're doing their best to limit potential liability going forward. Each year, new legislation or even new legal issues may emerge that signal the need, you know, or create an advantage for employers to change current workplace policies they have in place. And for some employers who don't have policies in place yet, it's a great opportunity to get those together. And so, for example, as many people know, each employer in BC is now required, following an amendment to the Employment Standards Act, to offer 5 paid sick days to each employee. So employees have a right to take these sick days, and employers can require what the legislation calls reasonably sufficient proof of illness. So employers might want to take a look at their sick leave policy to ensure it captures this change. And of course, you know, there may be other policies that employers want to include as part of their workplace policy manual. A COVID vaccination policy is something many employers consider important, given the nature of the workplace. And employers want to ensure that any policy, both in breadth and content, reflects the current legal landscape, so they're best able to meet their obligations as employers and as healthcare providers. I have to say, every workplace is different, so employers want to make sure to do their due diligence and seek advice to ensure that any policy that they're intending to put in place, including a COVID policy, is appropriate and is legally defensible.
You mentioned employment agreements. Why would physicians want to review their employee agreements every year?
I always recommend to employers to do an annual review of their employment agreements. During the previous year, you know, for example, a new case law can emerge that could impact the validity of these agreements. Alternatively, amendments to legislation that govern employment can be made, and these can impact employment agreements. So, for example, while not in BC yet, Ontario amended its employment standards legislation to prohibit non-compete clauses in employment agreements. So this effectively rendered invalid employment agreements that contained a non-compete clause if those agreements were entered into after a certain date. So as I said, we don't have that change in BC at this point, but you know, it's something that we should be looking for as a potential. So keep an eye open for that. Another reason to review your employment agreements each year is that there could have been some fundamental changes to the employer's operation in the past year. So sometimes there are changes to who the employer is. When clinics merge, for example, when there's a change in clinic ownership, employment agreements may need to be amended to reflect those changes. You know, generally, I always think a regular review of employment agreements to ensure the termination provision is something the employer will be able to rely on should they need to terminate someone. You know, I always think it's a good idea to have a good look at it. Liability for severance at termination for employers, you know, is something that can be limited by way of a well-drafted termination provision. I mean, every employer wants employment agreements in place that are going to be found valid and enforceable if they're later challenged. Ensuring employment agreements reflect the current legal requirements, you know, that it's going to help doctors who are wishing to later rely on their contents, right? And I think, you know, finally, it's important to make sure that as employers, you still have the final version of the documents, the signed employment agreements saved, and that you can actually locate them. So this sounds silly, but we have this occur quite often in our practice where employers are not able to find the final version of signed employment agreements or find the fully signed version of the agreement. You people get busy, admin staff changes, and sometimes, you know, employers have hired staff so long ago that nobody knows where those agreements are anymore. So doing that annual checkup is, on the employment agreements, that can really help.
Can you talk about the legal requirements surrounding workplace bullying and harassment? What are employers required to do?
Under WorkSafe BC's occupational health and safety guidelines, many people know all employers in BC are required to have a written respectful workplace policy in place. So, you know, otherwise known as a bullying and harassment policy. So it's a written statement by your organization, and it's indicating that bullying and harassment is not acceptable and will not be tolerated. So it's a clear statement of that principle. And so when we prepare this policy for clients, you know, we also include and outline the complaint and investigation procedure as part of that policy, including to whom a bullying and harassment complaint can be submitted, as well as how complaints can be resolved or investigated, because many of these complaints can be resolved in advance of investigation. And we include that in what as part of one policy so that the information's in one document for everyone. And as employers, you know, I mean, there's always a potential that you will be required to handle a bullying and harassment complaint from someone you employ. And you want to ensure that you have a valid and comprehensive, respectful workplace policy in place, that staff know about it, and that staff have completed training on it.
Is there specific training on bullying and harassment that employers are required to provide?
Yeah, employers are required to provide respectful workplace training to staff, including supervisors, each and every year. And I always think that January is a great time to do this because it sets a clear tone for respectful interactions and relationships in the workplace for the year ahead, right? And if it's not January, I recommend to employers to pick a set time each year to fulfill the requirement, you know, of conducting this training so that employers can ensure that it gets done and that employees can anticipate. And for the training itself, you know, just with respect to, you know, what should it be? I always get lots of questions on that. You know, what does it look like? So, I mean, the content should include, of course, you know, a definition of bullying and harassment so staff understand what it is. And also, importantly, what it is not. Like it does not include reasonable management direction, for example, as well as how complaints are handled in the workplace, right? Including investigation and resolution processes. WorkSafe BC offers a sample PowerPoint training on their website, and it's actually good. It even has speaking notes for the presenter. So I think, you know, for employers, that's a great place to start. You know, of course, as employers, you're not required to use what WorkSafe BC provides for its training, that PowerPoint that I just spoke about. You're free to develop your own. So that's important to know. And after training is complete, whatever format you choose, employers will want to ensure that employees sign off on both the review of the respectful workplace policy that you have in place, as well as on the training that supports that policy.
Thank you, Leanne. How can doctors get in touch with you if they'd like to learn more?
It's my pleasure. WestCoastWorkplaceLaw.ca is our website. Feel free to reach out anytime. We enjoy supporting physicians and helping them create great workplaces.
Hi, Jackie. Thank you for joining me today.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Can you describe the importance of hiring right versus hiring right now and the impacts it can have on a business and its team?
Yeah, for sure. I think most HR professionals, myself included, will recommend hiring right versus hiring right now. I also believe most who have worked in recruitment and selection also have experienced cases of a manager needing a new employee quickly and outside of any annual workforce planning, which is a great example of when this question has come up. So the things that come to my mind when I think of hiring versus hiring right now, one being the financial cost of having to end the relationship if it doesn't work out, and the toll on the remaining team members, I feel like, is also something to consider. So in terms of the financial cost, you know, we know this can happen even in cases when hiring is done correctly, but I feel like the risk increases when we move through the recruitment process too quickly. So I'm referring to things like severance pay if the termination fits that definition, but also the costs that may be lost and will likely need to be spent again, you know, on things like the manager and HR's time to recruit, the loss of productivity of the work being done by that employee that has to stop until you have a replacement. There's lots of stats that have been shared, and depending on the level of the role, you can read anywhere between 20 to 50% of that employee's salary. It could be the financial risk of a termination. So something to think about depending on how fast you want to move through that process. And then, as I mentioned, the other area that I think is really important is the effect on the remaining team members. So ultimately, if the reason for the termination is cause and performance management isn't an option, you have to go down that path. But regardless, I feel like there is great value in giving some thought as to how that situation will impact your remaining team members. So for example, who will take over that person's work? Will that person be compensated for extra work? Is there anything that tells you that employee engagement on your team might be impacted? How will you manage the communication of this change? With the big decision to terminate an employee, I feel like it's important to take into account the legislation needs that we need to follow, but also the human needs. How are we treating this person and the remaining people is part of the process. I also think the positive benefits of hiring right are exactly what we look for in this recruitment and selection process, right? We look to source a candidate who has the minimum qualifications for the job and fits your organization's core values. So you can do this by putting some thought into an appropriate job description, posting that in places that you feel like are going to get folks that have the skills you need, and also provide a diverse candidate pool. You've created interview questions that you feel like are valid and reliable for the role. You've considered core values and strategic objectives of your organization and how this person can demonstrate those. So I think, looking back to the original question, hiring versus hiring right now, there's no argument that recruitment and selection takes time. I can also say that more often than not, hiring right now creates more risk than reward.
From a Canada-wide or even an international perspective, are there any policy changes that doctors can be aware of which might eventually make their way to BC?
From my knowledge, there's no policy changes coming into BC in the new year that might affect us directly. But there's a couple of things that have come up in HR conversations in my networking groups that are quite interesting to us, and we're curious if that in the future may result in some changes. So the first one is now mandatory in Ontario. Employers that have 25 or more employees are required to have a written policy on disconnecting from work. So they define that in their employee standards agreement. Employees not engaging in work-related communication, so this includes things like email, phone calls, video calls, sending or reviewing other messages, to be free from the performance of work. So obviously there's a time limit on this, but it's referring to outside of work hours. This is not in effect for BC employers, but it's just quite interesting for folks in the HR community to see if that eventually makes its way to BC. The other thing that keeps coming up, and I'm sure any, if not all, employers are already aware of this, is just the changes to our economy and how those have already been impacting employers' decisions to hire or rehire, as well as what we're seeing from candidates going into a negotiation for a new job. Employees are becoming, I would say, much more demanding in what they're asking for in terms of compensation and benefits. So it's just creating a more, I would say, a more competitive space for employers to really be clear on what they're providing as an employer of choice. I think also creating a space where employees feel less like they have to say yes to the first opportunity that comes to them, because if they don't like it, it's quite easy for them to go out and find a new opportunity.
Can you talk about the value of HR processes such as meeting regularly with employees, conducting annual reviews, and documenting and maintaining policies to help support the team and the business as a whole?
In my opinion, establishing a trust-based work environment that includes things like belonging and psychological safety are key to employee engagement. So meeting regularly with employees, demonstrating your care for them as a human, just beyond being an employee, will help when you have to have a difficult conversation. That trust is already there. You've already established a solid relationship. So when you have to have a difficult conversation, it will likely be easier. The other HR related tasks that you mentioned, so things like annual performance reviews, ensuring that your policies are written, shared, and understood. Again, I just think creates more space for conversation and engagement. Employees will know what's expected of them and can easily ask questions if they need clarification, especially things like policies. If you don't provide that expectation, they will make an assumption, and that assumption might not be what you'd like to see done in your business.
Where can doctors learn more about how to prioritize diversity and inclusion as part of their practice?
Yeah, I really appreciate that this question is included. What we know from organizations that incorporate equity, diversity, and inclusion well within their business is that it's most successful when it's woven into the organization and all aspects, and also supported by leaders. So this is rather than it being a quote unquote project with a start and end date just led by one person, whether that's an HR individual or a leader of any kind. My recommendation for any leader to prioritize equity, diversity, inclusion is to continue their own personal learning and create spaces for employees to share their knowledge. All employees will have their own lived experiences in equity, diversity, inclusion. And if you as a leader can create space for them to feel safe to share their lived experiences, again, that will help with trust in your work environment. I can say, speaking on trying to grow your own learning in equity, diversity, inclusion, one of my favorite ways to do that is to follow equity, diversity, inclusion leaders and authors on LinkedIn, as well as equity, diversity, inclusion organization. They'll often post reports, stats, webinars, research, the things that you may find really interesting to start some of those conversations with your employees or just share. I have no connection with any of these, but I really like the Canadian Center for Diversity and Inclusion, which you can find online. A few authors that I'm reading right now, there's a book called Inclusion on Purpose, written by Rushika Tolshian. Brené Brown has some podcasts recently around like what's happening at work, she calls them, and brave spaces within this courageous leadership space. As well, Dr. WBC has been working with members for a number of years on equity, diversity, inclusion efforts. So they started in 2019, and on their website, they've listed a number of steps that they've taken, including creating a barrier assessment. And I think they identified 57 actions from that assessment, where they've got with implementing all of those in terms of this equity, diversity, inclusion journey. They've also listed some additional learning opportunities on their website, easy things that you could go at any point and pop by and read or listen to.
A big thank you to Leanne and Jackie for speaking with me today. This has been Doc Talks, a Doctors of BC podcast. Please subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.